of Lake Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke. Normally, we hear classical piano music played on a modern instrument, but what we're hearing right now is Mendelssohn, played on the type of instrument that he himself might have played. It's called a forte piano, and it was the instrument that Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, and even Brahms used both to compose and perform. Milwaukee is home to an amazing collection of these instruments thanks to the collecting efforts of Father Robert Novotny. When he was no longer able to care for the 28 instruments in his collection, Stuart Dempsey, co-owner of Samara Garden and Home, a furnishings boutique, bought them. His aim was to preserve the important collection of unique and near-unique instruments. Most are not yet playable, but one has been restored and will have its modern debut this Sunday afternoon at Samara. Local pianist Richard Carsey will perform, along with Scott Cook on cello. Carsey and Dempsey spoke with Lake Effect's Bonnie North in the salon where the concert will take place, and Carsey explains the appeal of playing a classic instrument like this one.
There's a transparency on an instrument like this. You can get colors, especially the softer shadings, that you couldn't get before. And as I've started working on some Mendelssohn and some Schumann and little bit of Beethoven on this instrument, I'm realizing there's light bulbs that are going off of, oh, this is why there's this constant sort of, you can get away with this constant strumming in the Mendelssohn that you just heard. There's this constant action with your right hand. On some modern pianos that are much larger and fill larger rooms, it can get a little muddy. It can get very, very thick. It completely solves itself when you're dealing with an instrument like this. And you can have the kind of clarity with the moving bass line. Very often, these composers will have things weighted towards the bottom, where the bass part, your left hand, is playing something very, very melodic. On a modern instrument, that's a little more difficult to pull off because it just can get a little boomier.
And I was going to say, what it sounded like to me is that there's less sustain on this, so you're not getting a lot of stuff that, as you say, muddies it up.
Well, there isn't the entire instrument is a soundboard, and there isn't any steel frame inside to vibrate as well. It's strung a little differently, and I know that Stuart is going to talk more specifically about these things. But that combination of sonic elements just means that the instrument has a transparency, doesn't have the kind of power that a modern instrument would have, but for a smaller room, which is where we're going to be performing here, that isn't necessarily disadvantageous. You want that kind of intimacy.
Well, Stuart, we're sitting in your back room here where this concert is going to happen, and you are the reason that this concert is going to happen because you're the one who has saved these forte pianos from ruin, and this is the very first one that you've restored. And please tell me about the piano, and then we'll talk about more about how you came into this collection.
Well, the piano is by the maker J.B. Stryker, and Stryker the firm was active in Vienna. It started out actually in Augsburg in the 1770s as Johann Andreas Stein, and the Stein piano so delighted Mozart that he actually wrote this flowing letter back to his father about how he couldn't believe the way that the action worked, the way that it was so responsive and it never blocked, that is the hammers going up against the strings and making a thud, which a lot of the early pianos did. So from the Stein tradition, both the children of the Steins, Nanette Stein-Stryker, is the only woman that ever had success as a piano manufacturer. Once her father had died, she started manufacturing pianos on her own in Vienna. She married a Stryker, Johann Andreas Stryker, just like her father's name was Johann Andreas. Then they had a son, Johann Baptiste, J.B. Stryker. And that's who actually made this particular piano. But he was taught by his mother, who was taught by her father. So there's a long dynasty and tradition of making these pianos. And Stryker is one of the top names in the world, although they went out of business in 1896. So this piano actually harkens back to all of the early forte pianos. And in fact, as Richard was saying, that the composers themselves were demanding more and more out of their instruments, especially volume and range. But the Viennese makers were rebelling against that because Vienna was an extremely conservative city. They were trying to keep their market there, and what the market wanted was this softer sound and not necessarily all the new modern bells and whistles. this piano is actually identical to the pianos that Nanette Stryker was making in 1816 for Beethoven, with the exception that everything has become larger, the range has become bigger, but because of the limits of the Viennese action, all they could do was make the parts larger, and this is the ultimate development. They could not get any larger in order to make more sound come from these pianos. So the Viennese action died at this point.
And what year was this one built?
This was built around 1870. But again, it sounds like pianos that were built 40 years earlier.
Talk a little bit about what the difference between a modern piano and a forte piano is. I mean, this has an action like a modern piano. It's a hammer action. It's not a plucked action like a harpsichord. So was this considered a transitional instrument, or is it completely its own genre?
Well, it's really its own genre because there were two schools of piano building, the English and the Viennese. And often this is referred to as a Viennese action, even though it's also the German action, because in the German-speaking countries, this is the action that they used at this time. Some of the piano manufacturers took on the English school of building and the English action, which became the standard of what we know today in grand pianos. But this was in itself a separate action, and the Viennese felt it was superior and held on to it as long as they could. Now, the difference between a modern piano and a pianoforte or forte piano, and those terms are interchangeable, the difference would be, and especially in this piano, is that instead of felt-covered hammers, we have leather-covered hammers, which were what they started with in the 1700s when they developed the piano. The second thing is that the piano is straight-strung. That is, the strings run completely away from the player. They are not crossed over like the modern pianos. The Viennese retained that for a very long time, feeling that there was a loss in tone if you crossed the strings. The third thing about these is they have what's known as a floating soundboard. It's only glued down around the side edges, but the whole front of the soundboard towards the player is actually loose and floats and can vibrate differently than a modern piano, which the soundboard is fixed at all sections. So those are the main differences, and the touch of the Viennese piano is much lighter. The key depth is much shallower, so you're able to do like runs and trills and things like that as effectively on this, and probably more so because you're not having to actually work physically as hard to achieve that.
So you don't exert as much pushing down to actually make the sound.
Exactly, and with the key depth he's talking about, the key does not go down as far. So you feel like, in playing it, that the strike of the key happens just a shred sooner than you're accustomed to. And it takes a tiny bit of adjustment in figuring that out. Certainly less adjustment to play this than to play a harpsichord. I mean, where the pluck is going to... It is a completely different thing. When I play the harpsichord, it sounds like throwing silverware down the stairs. I mean, it's a very different kind of technique.
Right.
And with this, you can adapt to it, but you can also realize, when I was a student, I was playing the Beethoven Waldstein Sonata, and in the last movement, it's got this series of octave glissandos. And on a modern piano, the key depth is so deep, you can't really quite play an octave glissando. You can play a glissando with, you know, one finger. On this, it's like, oh, that would be a breeze. Now I get it. Now I understand how you would accomplish that.
Like butter.
Like butter, baby.
Well, I think this is a perfect time to actually hear a little something. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to play for us to demonstrate the sound of this wonderful instrument?
I'm going to play the Brahms A Major Intermezzo, Opus 118. And the reason that I chose this, when I was first introduced to this piano a couple weeks ago, the thing that captured my imagination so much was that this was a piano that is very similar to the one that Brahms did all of his composing on, which surprised me because Brahms was one of those composers who, if you listen to his piano concertos, it's huge. And it's very contrapuntal. It's a big kind of sound. So that this was the sort of instrument that he chose to work on in his home, not necessarily to perform on, but to work on in his home, I thought was fascinating, and my mind immediately went to this intermezzo. Thank you.
Richard, that was amazingly beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Stuart, this all begs the question of how you came to have this particular piano, which I understand is one of 28. Is that right?
Yes, it came as sort of by default. I knew and have been friends with Father Robert Novotny, who is still living. And he, from about 1950 on, had a passion for collecting early pianofortes. And when he would take sabbatical in Europe, he would ship containers back with pianos that he had found. His dream was always to restore them, having them stand side by side, both the English school of piano making and the Viennese school, and have artists come in to be able to play the music these composers composed on the instruments and hear the music as it should be heard. We cannot hear the nuances that we hear on this piano on a modern piano. The reason that I actually got all of these is because, unfortunately, Father Novotny became ill, and they had to clear out his building, and they were in great danger because most of them are not in very good shape, needs lots and lots of work, lots of money put into them. I was able to purchase the pianos and save them, but part of the key was that a friend and fellow music lover, Steve Konevsky, who owns Brass Light Gallery, had just moved into his new space and had extra warehouse space. I traded him a Stryker Grand for his house up north for long-term storage so these pianos could be saved. My goal now is to find a way to get them out of that storage and on public view, whether or not they're restored. I think students of music would just be fascinated to see these pianos. It's not a place that I can really take the public, so I'm really looking for a venue. And my business partner here, Mary Beth, has told me that seven pianos in the shop is enough. So, and we are a retail store, so I can't just keep bringing pianos here. So hopefully with this concert series, you know, there'll be something that materializes and somebody who's interested maybe has some space and we can get these on public view.
Have you actually talked to people at the Smithsonian and that sort of thing? That I would think that there would be interest in this just from a, you know, a music history perspective, that there's this amazing collection of pianos, working or not, that people could use for research.
Well, the problem with that is I have gone a number of places and contacted people, but most of these places, like the Smithsonian, they already have well over 100 instruments of their own and that represent the same sort of thing that these do, so it'd be a bit redundant. However, there is one instrument in the collection, a small square from about 1800, that has been identified as the only extant example. So there's a few things that could go the museum route. But I find it so fascinating that this man had collected these and had a reason for all of them being together that my goal is to try as best I can to keep the collection together. And I'm very excited that we've gotten one out of storage and it's restored and now the public gets to enjoy it.
We've been talking about restoring these pianos, Stuart. Who did it? Is this a local job?
Chris Klein from Klein's Piano Workshop restored this piano. He worked on some of the earlier pianos of Father Novotny's in that collection, and he is really the only one locally that I have found has a passion, an interest, and the skill to work on these. These pianos are extremely sensitive, and they take a lot of extra care in the restoration and upkeep, and Chris is very adept at that. So I was just so pleased that he agreed to take this project on, and I don't know how far I can push him with the next ones, but he certainly did a marvelous job on this particular piano.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for taking time to, Richard, play for us this morning, and Stuart, for collecting these and saving them from the trash heap and starting this house concert series and taking time this morning to talk to me. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Milwaukee pianist Richard Carsey will perform a concert of late classical and early romantic music for cello and forte piano Sunday afternoon at 2. The concert will be held in the Salon at Samara Garden and Home. Stuart Dempsey is co-owner of the store and owner of the restored forte piano on which Carsey will play. They spoke with Bonnie North. There's more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Finally, finally today, the weather has warmed up a notch from earlier this week, but remains below freezing. In short, it's the sweet spot for ice skating outdoors. In the latest installment in our series of Milwaukee Soundscapes, contributor Sam Willis takes us outside to the slice of ice at Red Arrow Park in downtown Milwaukee. The Slice of Ice at Red Arrow Park, recorded by contributor Sam Willis. With that, we wrap up another week's worth of Lake Effect shows. We're produced by the team of Dan Harmon, Stephanie Lecce, and Bonnie North, all together again after months of vacations and respiratory viruses. We get production assistance this week from Eleanor Peterson and Sam Willis. John Strelecki is our studio engineer. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you can be with us again tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Have a great weekend and stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.